Now with the next verse, here we're moving into the second limb. Okay, the second limb was making offerings. Okay, so I'm going to read the next two verses together because actually the next three verses are all offering verses, but the next two verses have to do with physical offerings, so I'll explain them at the same time. So it said, beautiful flowers and regal garlands, sweet music, scented oils and parasols, sparkling lights and sublime incense I offer to you, victorious ones. Fine dress and fragrant perfumes, sandalwood powder heaped as high as Mount Meru, all wondrous offerings and spectacular array I offer to you, victorious ones. Okay, the victorious ones that we're offering, that's an epithet for the Buddha, because Buddhas are victorious over the negative emotions and the disturbing attitudes and the contaminated karma, as well as the subtle obscurations on the mind. Okay? So whenever you see the term conqueror or victorious one, it's not a battle term, okay? At least in Buddhism. Or, you know, or maybe you could say the Buddha did battle with all the negative qualities inside of himself and conquered them and was victorious over them. But that's the meaning of the epithet. Okay, so here we're making offerings. Why do we make offerings? Okay, very often we have an altar or shrine in our room or in our house. You know, we put flowers, fruit. You can see the Tara shrine out in the hallway. We put water bowls. You know, we offer various beautiful things. Why do we do this? You know, is it just so that it looks nice, so that when we go by we get pleasure? Look, you know, is that why we offer? Or is it because, you know, we need to make offerings to the Buddha so the Buddha will like us or approve of us or grant us some kind of special boon or blessing? You know, is that why we make offerings? I don't think so. Okay. The purpose of making offerings is to help us overcome our own miserliness and our own stinginess. Okay? And by making offerings, we also accumulate a great deal of positive potential or merit. Okay. Now, if we look at our lives, you know, can you see areas in which you're a little bit stingy or even a lot stingy? Yeah. Are you as generous as you would like to think you are or like to be? No. Sometimes we're generous with material things, but we aren't generous with our time. Or we're generous with our time, but we aren't generous with giving love and appreciation. You know? Or we're generous with money, but we're not generous in other ways. Okay? Or sometimes we'll give money to the people who are nice and like us, but we won't give money to people who are poor because we think they should go out and get a job. Okay? So, you know, we often see in our own mind that you know, there's lots of strings attached to being generous. And sometimes, actually, when we're generous, we have expectations of getting something back. You know, I'll give you something, and then you'll give me a present back. Or I'll give you something, and then you'll like me. Okay? Because we do use money and material things as a way of gaining people's affection, don't we? No, if we're honest about it. Yeah? And then sometimes we have a really hard time giving. One part of our mind says, if I give, I won't have it anymore. And I'll need it, for sure I'll need it, so I can't give it away. I've lived at a lot of different people's houses as a nun, you know, because people will put me up when I'm traveling. I stayed at one woman's house. Her whole basement was full of boxes, empty boxes, okay? Small boxes, big boxes, tins, all kinds of containers. Okay. And she couldn't throw them away because she thought, if I throw away this box or this container, I'm going to need it later on. Yeah. So she was actually very glad when I came to stay with her and she gave me permission to go and clean her basement out and throw them all away because she couldn't throw them away. Okay. And in our community in Seattle, we had a time where everybody's homework assignment was to go clean out a closet. you know, and give things away, and then to report back the next week their experience about giving things, you know, taking it to, you know, a thrift shop or, you know, an organization that helps the poor. And some people, they couldn't even get to cleaning out their closets. They were too busy, you know. And some people got it as far as the front door but couldn't get it out of the house. Other people couldn't get some of the things in their boxes. When they were cleaning out the closet, they would discover something that they forgot that they even had. Okay, they hadn't used it in so long that they even forgot they had it. But when they found it again, then they couldn't give it away. Okay, because maybe it had some sentimental value, you know, or maybe, again, this thing, oh, but if I give it away, I won't have it. Okay, so sometimes, you know, when we look, our own mind can really be very, very stingy, holding on to things with fear, you know. One of my friends told me that, you know, he goes to visit his parents and his father's whole freezer is just packed full of stuff because his father is so afraid of going hungry, you know. So the whole freezer packed full of stuff. Yeah. So, you know, often we hoard things, we hold on to things out of fear. And when we give them, there's a real feeling of poverty and fear. So, you know, that's the stingy mind that is thinking about ourselves and not really thinking that, well, there, you know, okay, I might need those things sometime, but there are other people who need them right now. Yeah. So, you know, we have so much stuff in our closets, yeah, which we might need sometime, but probably not. But there are people, even in our own country, let alone in other countries, that don't have enough clothing and don't have enough food, who need those things right now. And wouldn't it be wonderful if we could share some of those things? Okay? So this attitude of miserliness, it afflicts us, and it keeps us from, you know, really sharing resources properly. And the thing that's so strange about miserliness is we think, if I hold on to it, then I'll have it. If I give it, I won't have it. But when we understand karma, the exact opposite is true, because being miserly is the karmic cause of being poor in the future, and being generous is the karmic cause for being rich in the future. So if you think about it, you know, we all have enough to eat. We live in a very fortunate circumstances. How is it that we have enough food and clothing and medicine? We have a roof over our heads and so much pleasure, you know, around us. How is it? Well, this all came about karmically because in previous lives we were generous. Okay? So giving, if we think in terms of karma, is the cause for receiving. Giving is not the cause for poverty. Yeah. Miserliness is not is the cause of poverty, not the cause of saving things for ourselves like our miserly mind thinks it is. You get what I'm saying? Yeah. And so this whole thing of being generous, it's when we can really be generous, our own heart feels so good, doesn't it? Have you had times in your life where you've given somebody something just with so much love and just no attachment to it at all, and how nice you feel inside when you give like that? I mean, right away we experience the benefits of generosity. And then also in future lives we get those same benefits. So we can give money and material things, and that helps lessen our greed. We can give our time and offer service. Many of you do here. I've seen many of you here working at Mava and offering service at the temple. You know, we give our love and affection to others, you know, supporting people when they're feeling down, encouraging people in their practice, helping them when they're sick or when things are happening in their lives. There's so many ways to be generous. And it's the practice that makes us happy, makes other people happy, and produces wonderful karmic causes. Okay. So the practice of making offerings to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha is the same practice of generosity. It creates a tremendous amount of merit or positive potential because the ones that we're offering to, the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the Sangha, are, you know, ones that are full of noble, spectacular qualities. You know, so when we make offerings to Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and Arhats and so on and so forth, you know, they're very powerful fields with which we create positive qualities because of their qualities. Okay? Similarly, giving to the poor and the needy and the sick, they're a very strong field for creating karma because of their desperate need. Okay? So making offerings, you know, to the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha is a very, very beautiful practice. In the Tibetan tradition, we do lots of offerings. And so you'll often see a shrine, you know, with food on it and the water bowls and flowers. And then when we do chanting, we play music and things like that. Here, you know, the beautiful sound of the gong when we ring it. You know, or the bell or the wooden fish, we're offering music and sound to the Buddhas. When we chant nicely, we're offering the beautiful sound. You know, we can make various other offerings. And it's a way of creating this kind of positive potential. There's also a meditation. My teacher likes to teach us to do this, where we imagine all sorts of beautiful things and then offer them. And just this thing of imagining beauty makes our own minds so happy. And it also helps us overcome greed ourselves. You know, because we like to imagine beautiful things, don't we? I mean, when you sit down to meditate, isn't one of the biggest distractions that you start imagining beautiful things? Yeah? Start thinking about your boyfriend, start thinking about your girlfriend, going on holiday to a really beautiful place, you know, or that beautiful dress that you'd really like to buy, or that really lovely jewelry, or, you know, get some nice oil, you know, scented oil of some sort, or a car, you know, let's get a new car, or a new motorcycle, some new sports equipment. We like to imagine beautiful things, okay? When we do that in our meditation, it just becomes a distraction. But when we, you know, imagine beautiful things and then offer them to the holy beings, it becomes a way of creating a lot of positive potential. Okay? So when you go shopping, when you go into the shopping center, instead of with a greedy mind thinking, I want this, I want this, I want this, you know, and planning how to buy everything, just enjoy the beauty but then offer it. You know, you don't need to own something to offer it. So you can go in the shopping center, oh, look at that, those beautiful shoes. I offer them to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. You know, look at that new computer. Yeah, with all the fancy features I really like, I offer that computer to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. Now, so whatever it is that our mind is craving, whatever it's attached to, you know, we offer. And it frees our mind from the greed, and it creates a real sense of wealth and a sense of beauty around us. Okay? So, like in my practice, when I get up in the morning, the first thing I do in the morning is make offerings. I'm still usually half asleep, but, you know, it gets me going. Okay, so I get up in the morning. First thing I do is I make 3 prostrations to the Buddha's Dharma and Sangha. Okay, and then I have a little electric light on my altar, so I plug it in when I first wake up and offer light. And light symbolizes wisdom, so it's a way of, you know, creating the cause to increase our own wisdom. And then I offer the water bowls. In the Tibetan tradition, we have the custom of offering water bowls. The reason we offer water is because we can usually offer water without being attached to it. So it's a very pure offering. Our mind isn't clinging to it. You know, water is very plentiful, especially nowadays, isn't it? So we can offer it very freely without any clinging or greed for ourselves, without any miserliness. Okay, so I make the water offerings, and then often I offer food. You know, sometimes people, you know, bring food then to offer, you know, sometimes it's fruit or it's tea or it's, you know, candy or cookies or health bars or, you know, whatever is around, you know, to make offerings. So, you know, I make the offerings, and then in the evening, you know, I take down the water bowls. Before I go to bed, I unplug the light. And then the food I'll leave up sometimes one day, 2 days, and then you take it off and you give it to other people, or you can have it yourself. But it's a real nice way because, you know, like I said, I'm usually half asleep when I'm doing it, but it's a way of, you know, and it's a habit. So it's I'm thinking about it now. I mean, it's a nice habit to get into of just making offerings, being generous, giving something first thing in the day. Yeah? And it helps you wake up, too. Okay? So we can make actual offerings. Yeah? When we make actual offerings, like when, you know, there was a group of Sri Lankans who came yesterday who brought a lot of these flowers, and they made a food offering as well. It was really quite beautiful. You know, we offer the physical object, but at the same time in our mind, we can imagine the whole space filled with beautiful offerings. Okay? So we might just be offering, you know, like a few flowers, you know, one vase full of flowers, but we imagine the whole space full of, you know, all these very beautiful perfumed flowers. Isn't that a neat image to think, you know? Or, you know, when we offer water, we think that we're offering very pure nectar, very sweet nectar that satisfies sentient beings, that brings bliss in their mind. When we offer food, you know, it's not just one little apple or one little orange, but we think the whole, you know, space filled with all sorts of delicious food, you know. And it's all free of pesticides, and, you know, so really good quality things that brings much delight, and we offer it, okay? So we not only make the actual offering, but, you know, imagined offerings, mentally transformed offerings, beauty that we see in our mind, that we imagine the sky full of it, and then we offer, okay? And like the other day, Venerable Kungsi and I went into St. Louis. I was giving a talk at a Catholic girls' school, and coming back, you know, the landscape around here is so beautiful, you know, in the springtime with all the flowers blooming and all the trees, and then the sunlight was just sparkling on the water. It was so beautiful, and so I was commenting to her that, you know, when I see this kind of beauty, then, you know, just offering it to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. So instead of thinking, oh, this is so beautiful, I'm so glad my senses get pleasure from it, you know, oh, this is so beautiful, I offer it to all the holy beings, you know. And I offer it to also all the sentient beings,